let's begin with a couple of readings. I'm going to do a reading from 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 through 8, and then continuing 18 through 21. And I'm reading from the Inclusive Bible, mostly because every other version of the Bible I've looked at used gendered language for God, and they do such a good job of not doing that. So, hear now these words. Beloved, let us love one another, because love is of God. Everyone who loves is begotten of God and has knowledge of God. Those who do not love have known nothing of God, for God is love. There is no fear in love, for perfect love drives out fear. The fear is to expect punishment, and anyone who is afraid is still imperfect in love. We love because God first loved us. If you say you love God but hate your sister or brother, you are a liar. For you cannot love God whom you have not seen if you hate your neighbor whom you have seen. If we love God, we should love our sisters and brothers. We have this commandment from God. And then just a quick little quote from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., probably my favorite quote from him. Hatred paralyzes life. Love releases it. Hatred confuses life. Love harmonizes it. Hatred darkens life. Love illuminates it.
Song about love from North Carolina boys. You may have heard of the Avid Brothers.
The Avid Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you do.
Good stuff.
This morning is entitled My Thoughts on Love. So we live in a society that has whole industries formed around stuff about love. Education that we receive about love, about what love looks like, comes mostly from them. How many of us on Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day, anniversary, you know, I call cards and gifts. See, the industry's livelihood rests in their ability to condition us in what we believe about love, how we believe we should express it, and ultimately what we believe love looks like. It's a perspective whose interest isn't communicating about real love, but rather its primary goal, possibly its only goal, is to sell products. So, while most of us can agree that Jesus' primary message was to teach us to love God and each other all of the time, if we stop to think about it, we really can't fully do that. Pretty unhealthy about what love is. Principles that we learn from Hallmark. So, this Sunday before Valentine's Day, I thought we might take a few moments, a little bit of time, to look at love from a slightly less commercially induced perspective. Looking at questions like, how do we learn about love? What's the opposite of love? Where does it come from? What does love look like? Now, keep in mind that we aren't talking about Kodak moments here. That sentimental perspective is mostly a result of our commercially induced perspectives on what love looks like. We're not here to talk about the stuff that sells cards and chocolates. We're not talking about the precious gurgle of a baby's laugh, or the embrace of the one that we love, or moonlight walks on the beach. Those all come from places of love, but what does love itself actually look like? How do we conceptualize, think about love beyond the platitudes that make us feel good? Platitudes like what we actually have in today's reading from 1 John. Things like, God is love. I mean, sure, we can all probably agree with that. We likely wouldn't be here in church today if we didn't somewhat agree with that. And it does feel pretty good, doesn't it? I mean, God is love. If you hear it said just the right way, it kind of gives you warm fuzzies. But what does it tell us about love that's actually practical? How does it tell us what love looks like? Well, let's start with what some other folks have said about love. Biblically speaking, if I have prophetic powers and understand all the mysteries and all the knowledge, and if I have all faith as to remove mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. Mother Teresa tells us we can do no great things, only small things with great love. in reaction to anti-gay demonstrators holding up signs that said, "God hates fags," one person commented, "What part of love is kind don't they understand?" One of my favorite colloquial theologians, Garrison Keillor, observes, "Love has brought a great many people to safety when competency was exhausted." As the Bible says, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. And then finally, scientist and theologian Teilhard de Chardin wrote, "Someday, after we have mastered the winds, the waves, the tides, and gravity, we shall harness the energies of love. Then, for the second time in the history of the world, we will have discovered fire." Well, that's all nice. And I saw that it even brought a smile to some of your faces, possibly even warmed your hearts a bit. So having heard all of that, can you now tell me what love looks like? Probably not. See, part of the problem is that our commercially induced understanding of love is too simple. You see, there are many kinds of love. There are just so many of them, too many of them, to even begin to summarize love in a commercial jingle or a quick saying or a clever rhetorical refrain. You see, none of us in the course of human history seem to have ever fully understood what love is, never seem to have been able to describe what love looks like. I think that is partly because, and this is important, love never looks the same. When I talk about love on Sunday mornings, it's not unusual for me to talk about my love of Reese's Peanut Butter Cup ice cream. I like to point out that the love that I have, and I do, for Reese's Peanut Butter Cup ice cream is different than the love I have for my children. I mean, isn't the love you have for your children or even your friends different from the love you have for your parents or someone who is very close to you? We could probably come up with a whole list of different kinds of love, about as long of a list, I would say, as the things that we do love. And I believe that still would be an incomplete list of kinds of love. Because you see, the way that I loved Reese's Peanut Butter Cup ice cream was different at 18 when my metabolism was in high gear. Different than it is now when it seems to be missing in action, right? The way I loved my children when they were infants is different now that they are independent adults. None of those kinds of love is better than, stronger than the other. But the point is, even if we can pinpoint a particular type of love, and even if we name it, it changes. That's also an important point. Love is alive. Love has a life of its own. And because of that, trying to pin down what love is like trying to pin down a butterfly. If you keep it pinned down too, you no longer have a butterfly. So, that being said, on love, what it looks like as I understand it right now. Tomorrow I might have to give a completely different message as I learn more about love and grow in it, through it, and by it. So because love changes, because love is alive, we must be willing to learn to love every day. We can't just figure it out once and think that we are finished. In some ways, love is an art, a skill that must be practiced every day, or we lose our ability to understand it and live into it as fully as God desires for us. Each single day without practice, without spiritual reflection on it, puts us 2 days behind where we should be, because even as we lose that day of practice, love has grown a day in a new and wonderful and even unimaginable way. See, love is about relationship. When we love something or somebody, we tend to want to draw it near to us. Use, again as an example, me and a bowl of Reese's peanut butter cup ice cream. When I see it, I'm likely to draw it near me. So, an interesting thing to consider is what the opposite of that is. What the opposite of love is. Is it hate? If love is about relationship, drawing something near to us, is hate about the denial of relationship, pushing something away? Just because it brings me great joy. Let's continue thinking about that bowl of Reese's peanut butter cup ice cream. Ever since my metabolism, let's call it headed south, I have a sort of love-hate relationship with that ice cream. Now, given the choice, I am still more likely to pull that bowl towards me than push it away. Even though there is some degree of hate towards it now, I'd much prefer to be in relationship with it than not. So, I have to say, I don't think that hate is the full opposite of love, which admittedly seems a bit odd because we normally like to think of hate as the opposite of love. But hate doesn't always cause us to avoid a relationship. Sometimes it oddly pulls us into it. Hate doesn't always cause us to send something away from us. Sometimes it sort of counterintuitively causes us to be drawn or curious to it or curious about it. So what does cause us to avoid a relationship? What does cause us to send something away? Our reading today from 1 John suggests that it is fear. And I have to say, I actually do believe that fear is the opposite of love. If I, heaven forbid, were to fear a bowl of Reese's peanut butter cup ice cream, you wouldn't be able to get me in the same room with it. Ultimately, fear really is the opposite. Fear is about the end of, destruction of, avoidance of relationship. Fear intensifies our sense of separation. Fear intensifies our sense of aloneness. Fear leads us away from love. Fear opposes, is the opposite of love. But the amazing thing is how so many people fight, struggle, demand even, to hold on to their fear. There are those right now who are even thinking that's probably too simple to view, how naive. But the truth is, we have actually learned to be afraid of not having our fear. So we defend it, we justify it, we fight for it, we say how naive, or it isn't that easy. Not only do we demand to hold on to our fear, the thing that separates us from love, but we also paint our fear over, disguising it as things like self-preservation, morality, even God's will. And when we do, we've fooled ourselves. We we fooled ourselves, and in doing so, we've denied ourselves of the one thing that can help in things like self-preservation, morality, and even knowing God's will, whatever that is. That one thing is love. We fear losing our fear. We convince ourselves that we need that fear. That somehow the thing that intensifies our sense of separation and prevents us from fully knowing love, but we've convinced ourselves that it somehow keeps us safe. All the while, we come to church and learn about the God who is love, not the God who is fear. All the while we come to church and read and hear stories about the messengers of God, angels appearing before us, and what do most of those stories have been saying? Almost without fail, the very first thing that the primary message these celestial beings have for humanity in all these stories is, do not fear. All the while we come to church, read about the teachings of Jesus, teaching us to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves. If we fear either God or neighbor, we can have a full relationship with neither. If we fear either God or neighbor, we can truly love neither. See, the way that I see it, love is not a luxury of life like the commercially induced perspectives try to teach us. Instead, I believe love is a necessity in life if we are to survive as a population. If we cannot love, fear will win the day. And we will turn on each other over things as small as getting our own way or as slight as the name that we use for God. Love is what we were formed by, conceived with, and created for. Love is what life, what God is about, and therefore a life fully lived should have no room for fear. Love is one of the most profound human experiences. It is one of the noblest aspirations. When we finally achieve that inner spirituality of love, where there is no longer fear, or at least very minimized, we can move from two perspectives of self-protection, all the other unhealthy ways that we relate to each other, God-like, something that is a truer reflection of this thing that we call God, something that lives into Jesus' plea to us to love God and to love in the same way our neighbor. It means our lives can be a gift to all of those who enter it, and that their lives can be a gift to us. It means when someone enters into your life, you never ask yourself what they have to offer you, but rather what gift they have come to receive from you. And when they receive that gift, they actually leave you with a gift as well. The gift of living more fully into being a loving person. And for me, today at least, that's what love looks like. Together. Following the teachings of Jesus and so many other great spiritual guides is, at times, more difficult than we ever imagined. Not just because loving our enemies is so difficult, not just because giving away what we've worked hard to own is so hard, not just because forgiving can feel so counter to our human instinct, but because there are so many messages out there about what following love looks like. May we not only have hearts that long to walk in the teachings of love, but minds that earnestly seek to step in the right places. May we learn to follow mindfully rather than blindly. May we seek out a path that makes the world a better place for all people rather than simply for ourselves. May we have instilled in us an understanding that faith is not solely about our own personal souls, but rather about the entirety of creation. May we be encouraged to express love more fully in each of our actions, and in doing so, may we grow closer to each other, and in doing so, begin to heal the world. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. May your words and actions share that love and happiness with each person you meet.
So this is Mark's feel-good song. Yeah. He thought it was cheesy. You know,
it's a little cheesy, but it still makes me feel good.
The rainbow, so pretty in the sky. Thank you.